Some people may be hurried back to Earth to take up a fresh body there, others are sent upwards to a higher plane of existence. It just doesn't matter where one is, one still has lessons to learn and conclusions to draw. But anyway, the afternoon is well advanced, we must hurry because we have to get you to the Hall of Memories on this day. Let's get a move on, shall we? Father Makogwaska walked faster and it seemed that his feet were not even touching the walks. When Hoagie came to think about it, he couldn't feel the path under his feet either. It was all so frightfully strange, he thought. But, anyway, the best thing to do, he concluded, was to keep quiet and see what others did. They had been here so much longer. They rounded a little curve in the path, and straight ahead of them was the Great Hall of Memories. A white building which seemed as though it were made of brilliantly polished marble. Father Makogwaska said, "Let's sit down here for a few moments, Hoagie. We don't know how long you will be in the hall, and it's nice to look at all the people around, isn't it?" They sat down on what appeared to be a stone park's bench. Hoagie was fascinated that the bench took up his form, that is, instead of being hard and unyielding, it gave a little and adapted to his shape. He leaned against the back and that adopted the most comfortable shape for him. "Look," said Father Makogwaska. He pointed towards the entrance of the Hall of Memories. Hoagie followed his pointing finger and could scarce repress a smile. Slouching along was a big black cat looking as shamefaced and as guilty as could be. The cat looked up, saw them, and made a sharp turn and disappeared behind some bushes. Father Makogwaska laughed. "Do you know, Hoagie, here on this plane even the animals have to go to a Hall of Memories. They don't speak in human terms, of course, but you won't either when you get there, it's all done by telepathy." Hoagie looked at his former father with open-mouthed amazement. "Do you mean to tell me that animals go to the Hall of Memories? You must be joking, surely?" Father Makogwaska shook his head and laughed outright. Hoagie, you haven't changed at all, have you? You think that humans are the top of the rung of evolution, you think that animals are inferior creatures, don't you? Well, you are wrong, you are very wrong. Humans are not the ultimate form of perfection, there are so many, many other forms. Everything that is has a consciousness, everything that is lives, even this bench upon which we now sit is just a collection of vibrations. It senses high points on your anatomy and it yields to those high points and molds to you to give you greater comfort. Look. He stood up and pointed and Hoagie looked at the place where he had been sitting. The bench is returning to its normal state, when I sit down on it. He suited the words to the action or the action to the words, whichever way you like to put it, and sat down, and immediately the bench took up his anatomical form. But, as I was saying, Hoagie, everything has a consciousness, everything that is in a state of evolution. Now, cats do not become humans any more than humans become cats, they are different lines of evolution in the same way that a rose does not become a cabbage or a cabbage does not become a rose. But it has been proved even on Earth that plants have feelings. Those feelings have been detected, measured and plotted by sensitive electronic equipment. Well, here on this world people come to an intermediate stage. Here we are closer to the animals than we are on Earth. Don't think, Hoagie, that this is heaven. It is not, nor is the stage above, or above that, or even above that. Here is what we might term a halfway station, a place of sorting where it is decided what people will do. Will they go up to a higher plane? Or will they go back to Earth? I have learned a lot since I have been here. And I know that we are very, very close to the Earth plane. We are the difference between the ordinary AM radio and FM radio. FM is a lot better quality than is AM. It has faster vibrations, finer vibrations, and here on this world our vibrations are much, much better than those on Earth. We can perceive things more. We are in a state between the Earth physical and the over-self spiritual. We come here because we lose so many inhibitions. That is, on Earth I would have thought anyone was mad if they told me that a cat could talk, could have reason and all the rest of it. Here I learn that yes, they do have reason, very brilliant reason too in some cases. But on Earth we do not understand that because the precise pattern of reason is different from that of humans. They sat there for some moments, they could just see the outline of the cat in the distance. He was looking about rather guiltily and then he seemed to shrug his shoulders and lay down in the bright light and went to sleep. Sunlight? Hoagie looked at the sky, and then remembered that there was no sun here, everything was a miniature sun. Father McCoguska had obviously been following his thoughts because he remarked, "Oh no, there is no sun here. We take our energy from our surroundings, it is radiated to us, and here we do not have to eat Earth-type food, we do not have to indulge in the Earth-type form of eliminations. If we take the radiant energy from here we always have as much as we want and no more, but of Earth-type food well. There is always such a lot of wastage and getting rid of it is one of the big problems of humanity at the present time. So, remember Hoagie, you don't need to think up a meal here. Just let yourself be and your body will take all the energy it requires and you will not get hungry unless you think of Earth-type food, and then, for a short time you will possibly have a craving for it." Just at that moment a man came by and Hoagie started in real amazement. The man was smoking a pipe. Striding along, swinging his arms, he puffed heartily on a pipe and was belching clouds of smoke. Father McCoguska looked at Hoagie and laughed again. "Hoagie," he said, "I've been telling you that some people crave for Earth-type food, some people crave to have a smoke or a drink. Well, they can have it if they want to, but there just isn't any point in it. It means that they have not evolved to the stage necessary for them to shuck off old Earth habits. That fellow is smoking, well, okay, he likes it. But at some time he will come to the realization that it is just silly. He thinks of tobacco, then he thinks of a tobacco pouch, then he puts a hand in a suit of clothes which he has thought up and produces an imaginary pouch of tobacco with which he fills an imaginary pipe. Of course it is illusion, it is hallucination, it is self-hypnosis, but you get the same in mental hospitals, on the Earth. You get a fellow who's got a lot of screws loose, some may even have dropped out, and the fellow being insane to a greater or lesser degree thinks he is driving a car or riding a horse. I remember once going to a big mental hospital in Ireland and there I saw a man in a most peculiar attitude and I asked him what he thought he was doing. He looked at me as if I was an idiot not realizing that he was and said, "Well, what do you think I'm doing? Can't you see my horse? The fool is tired, he's lying on the ground and we can't possibly ride along until the fool horse gets to his feet." The insane man then carefully got off his imaginary horse and walked off in disgust, talking about all the lunatics there were in the mental home. Hoagie squirmed. He couldn't understand what was happening to him. He felt most peculiar, it seemed that he was a piece of metal being drawn to a magnet. For some reason he grasped the arm of the bench. Father McCoguska turned towards him and said, "The time has come, Hoagie, they're calling you to the Hall of Memories, you'd better go. I'll wait here until you come out, I may be able to help you, but when you come out call me Moses, not Father, I am not your father here. But now go." Hoagie rose to his feet and even in the process of rising to his feet he found that he had been drawn much closer to the Hall of Memories. In some confusion he turned to face the entrance and then found that he was almost running, he was going faster than he wanted to, anyway. But the great stone steps loomed ahead of him. Now, this close, he was amazed at the size of the hall. The dimensions of the great entrance thoroughly frightened him. He felt as possibly an ant might feel going through the entrance to some palace on Earth. He ascended the steps, each one seemed to be higher than the one before. Or was it that way? Possibly he was growing smaller, with each step he took. Smaller in his own estimation certainly. But he summoned up his courage a bit more and progressed upwards. Soon he reached what seemed to be a vast flat surface. He seemed to be on a plateau, a featureless plateau except that ahead of him there was a great door which seemed to reach up into the heavens. Hoagie walked forward and as he approached the great door it opened and Hoagie entered into the Hall of Memories. The door closed behind him. Chapter 10. The old monk painfully rose from the ground and dusted his faded robes. He looked with compassion at the hulking man climbing back over the fence separating the monastery ground from the public parkway. The man seemed to feel that the monk was looking at him. He turned around and stopped halfway across the fence and growled, "Cyrus Bollywaga, bud, that's me, top feature writer. If you want to make something of it, get a lawyer." The monk walked slowly to a rock and sat down with a heavy sigh. What a strange thing it was, he thought. He, an elderly monk, just walking in the garden of his monastic home for the last 50 years, and in spite of all the signs saying it was private property, this coarse, crude fellow had come clambering over, and in spite of the monk's protestations had come up to him and prodded him in the chest with a thick forefinger, "Give us the lowdown, bud, what gives in this air joint? You're all a lot of gays, eh? Well, you don't look too gay to me, but give us the lowdown, I gotta write an article." The old monk had looked the man up and down with rather more contempt than he thought he should have shown. It was not good to be so contemptuous of one's fellow man, but this one surely was beyond the limit. Old brother Arnold had been here for years. He had entered as a boy and lived here ever since, trying to reconcile the words of the Bible with what he felt to be right and wrong. He had been discussing with himself, as was his wont, what it was all about. He could not take everything as the literal truth which was in the Bible. Some time ago he had voiced certain doubts to the abbot, thinking that the abbot would help him to resolve his doubts and clear his mind, but no, the abbot had flown into a furious rage, and old brother Arnold had penances for a whole week. Penances washing all the dishes for the monastery. Then, as now, after being assaulted by this crude media yokel, he had repeated one prayer to himself over and over, "Lord, in thy mercy let nothing come too close nor seem too real." It calmed him, enabled him to gaze on things in an abstract manner. He had been wandering around thinking of his past life. There was the work in the mornings and the study in the afternoons, and so much illuminating to do. The paints nowadays were poor, plastic things, awful paints, and the vellum, well, least said about the vellum the better. It might be all right for lampshades, but for the top-grade illumination for which he was noted, modern supplies were useless. And then after the afternoon duties, what was there? The same day after day, week after week, month after month, and year after year, the vespers and then supper in solitary silence, and after supper compline, the completion of the seventh canonical hour. After that the lonely cell, cold and draughty, with a hard, narrow bed and the inevitable crucifix at the head of the bed, a cell so small that even a convict in a prison would have gone on strike under such conditions. He had been walking around thinking of that, and then this crude oaf had burst into the private's sanctuary, poking him in the chest, demanding that the old man should give him a sensational article. Gays? Good heavens no. Monks were not gays. They looked upon homosexuals with a certain amount of compassion, but with a total lack of understanding. The old man had stood his ground and ordered Cyrus Bollywaga off. The man had lost his temper. He had ranted on about the power of the press, saying that with his pen he could destroy the reputation of the monastery, and as the monk stood silent in his inner contemplation, Cyrus Bollywaga had suddenly raised a fist the size of a ham and struck the old man heavily in the chest, knocking him down. He lay there in a daze, wondering what ailed mankind nowadays. Why should a hulking lout like this strike a frail old man almost at the end of his life? He could not understand it. He lay there for a time, then slowly, painfully, he climbed on shaky legs to his unsteady feet and tottered to sit on a rack and to regain his equilibrium and composure. Yelling threats of exposure, Bollywaga finally jumped off the fence and dropped to the ground on the other side, moving off with a rapid shambling gait reminiscent of an inebriated gorilla rather than a specimen of Homo sapiens. Brother Arnold sat there beside the sparkling sea, gazing out with unseeing eyes, with ears untroubled, hardly perceiving in fact the shouts and yells of merrymakers on the public beach, children screaming and quarrelling and shrill-voiced harridans cursing their men for some imagined slight. At last old Arnold jumped, a hand had descended on his shoulder, a voice said, "What ails you, my brother?" He looked up to find another brother of equal age gazing down upon him, concern in his brown eyes. I have been insulted by a pressman who burst over our fence and struck me in the chest," said Brother Arnold. "He demanded that I tell him that we were all gays homosexuals in this monastery, and when I denied that with some acerbity, why, he struck me in the chest and knocked me to the ground. Since then I have felt unwell, and I had to rest a while. But come, let us return to the house." Stiffly he rose to his feet, and slowly the two old men who had been brothers in the monastery for many, many years wandered up the path towards the great building that was their home. That night after Compline, when the monks were in their cells, Brother Arnold felt considerable pain. He felt that his chest was being penetrated with hot spears. Feebly he used a sandal and banged upon the wall of his cell. There was a rustle and a voice came from outside his door. "What is it, brother? Are you ill?" Brother Arnold replied in a feeble voice, "Yes, brother. Will you ask Father Infirmarian if he can come and see me?" There was a muttered acknowledgement and the sound of shuffling sandals upon the stone floor. It was strange, thought Brother Arnold, that no one monk could enter the cell of another monk, not even from the purest motives. None other except Father Infirmarian could enter, and then only in the pursuit of his medical duties. Was there something in it? Are some monks homosexual? Possibly they may be, he thought. Certainly the authorities had enough rules and regulations to make sure that no two monks were together, and they could only go about in threes. Brother Arnold lay upon his bed of pain and thought about the matter until he was roused by the opening of his cell door and a gentle voice asking, "Brother Arnold, what ails you?" And so Brother Arnold told of the events of the afternoon, told of the blow upon his chest and of the falling. Father Infirmarian had been a fully qualified doctor of medicine who had given up the practice of medicine in disgust, not being able any longer to take part in the various rackets which pervaded medical science of the present age. Carefully he parted Brother Arnold's clothing and examined his chest, which now was black and blue and yellow, and then his trained eyes picked out Brother Arnold had some broken ribs. Carefully he recovered the old man's chest, rose to his feet and said, "I must go to Father Superior and give a report on this. Brother Arnold, you have broken bones, you need x-ray and you need hospital treatment." With that he turned and went out silently. Soon there came more shuffling noises and very low-toned voices in the corridor outside. His door was opened and Father Infirmarian and Father Superior entered and looked down upon him. "Brother Arnold," said the Superior, "you will have to go to hospital to be x-rayed and to have your ribs set and put in a cast. I will go and inform Father Abbot so that he may make the necessary arrangements. In the meantime, Father Infirmarian will stay with you here in case he can do anything for you." The Superior turned to leave the cell, but Brother Arnold cried, "No, Father Superior, no, Father Superior, I do not want to go to hospital. I have heard so much of the malpractice there, and I would rather be treated by Father Infirmarian, and if I am beyond his capacity, then I will commend my soul to God." "No, that will not do, Brother Arnold, I cannot accept that. Only Father Abbot can make a dispensation on this case. I will go to see him," said the Superior as he left the cell. There was little Father Infirmarian could do to help the aged brother, but he moistened the cloth and wiped the old man's brow to try to reduce the fever somewhat. Again he undid Brother Arnold's vestments so that not even that weight should cause further difficulty. Together they sat, for the old man was half sitting in his bed now, it being easier for him to breathe in that posture. Soon there came footsteps again. The cell door opened and in came Father Abbot. The Superior had to wait outside, for the cells were so small that they could not take more than two people when one was on a bed. Father Abbot came and looked down at Brother Arnold, and his face showed horror and shock at the state of the old man's chest. There was a low-voiced discussion between Father Abbot and Father Infirmarian, and then the abbot turned to Brother Arnold saying, "I cannot accept the responsibility, Brother Arnold, of keeping you here in this condition. You will have to go to hospital." He stopped for a moment and pursed his lower lip between finger and thumb in deep thought. After some moments he looked at Brother Arnold again and said, "In view of your condition, in view of your age, I will, if you wish, Brother Arnold, telephone for the bishop, and then we can only accept his ruling. I am very loath to leave this, my home, for the unknown perils of hospitals as they are of this day. I have heard so much against them that I have no confidence, and without confidence I should not benefit from their treatment. My whole faith is with Father Infirmarian. As you will, Brother Arnold, said Father Rabbit, I should not say this in your hearing, but I cannot help agreeing with you. The abbot left the cell and he and the superior went away toward the abbot's office, where minutes after he could be heard telephoning the bishop of the diocese in which the monastery was located. There were frequent, as you say, Father Bishop, as you say. Yes, I will do that, goodbye, and there was the sound of the telephone being replaced on its cradle. Father Rabbit sat in silence for a while and then, upon a sudden decision, he sent for a scribe who came to take dictation and to prepare a paper which Brother Arnold would have to sign, saying that if he refused to leave the monastery for a hospital he did so upon his own responsibility, and the monastery could not be held responsible for whatever occurred as a result of that decision. The monastery gleamed cold and white in the brilliant light of the full moon. Lights carrying clouds hurrying across the face of the moon somehow lent a sinister air to the monastic building. Moonlight reflecting brightly from the many windows glittered and seemed to wink at the clouds as they scudded by. Somewhere, a night owl called loudly in the darkness. Nearby there was a gentle hiss of waves lapping the sand, reaching up higher and withdrawing to form the next wave. In the monastery itself all was quiet, hushed as though even the building knew that death was at hand, as if it were waiting for the beating of the wings of the angel of death. Occasionally there came all those strange sounds which occur in an old building which is feeling the weight of the years. Every so often there came the scurrying pitty-pat of little mouse feet running across the polished floors, and sometimes a frightened squeak from a mouse. But the building was still and as silent as an old building can ever be. Then from the clock tower the hours rang out across the listening countryside. From the distance there came the roar of a train speeding along on its iron rails toward the metropolis. Brother Arnold lay upon his bed of pain. By the light of the flickering candle he could see Father Infirmarian gazing upon him with compassion. Suddenly, so suddenly as to make Brother Arnold jump, Father Infirmarian spoke, "Brother Arnold, we have been so concerned about you, about your future. Sometimes you have beliefs which are so different from those of the Orthodox religion. You seem to think it doesn't matter what you believe so long as you believe. Brother Arnold, at this late stage repent. Repent, let your shriving take place. Shall I call the Father Confessor for you, Brother Arnold?" Brother Arnold looked about him and said, "Father Infirmarian, I am satisfied with my way of life. I go to what I believe will be heaven. I go according to my own belief, not necessarily a belief according to the book. I believe that our prescribed religion, the Orthodox religion, is narrow in its concepts." He gasped as pain racked his body. He felt as though his chest was on fire, he felt as though nails were being driven through his chest, and he thought of the nails driven through the hands and the feet of Christ. He thought of the pain of the thrust in the body caused by the guard below the crucifix. "Father Infirmarian, Father Infirmarian," he called, "will you pass me the crucifix that I may kiss the five wounds?" Slowly Father Infirmarian rose to his feet and moved to the head of Brother Arnold's bed. Reaching up, after crossing himself, he touched the crucifix, lifted it down, and pressed it to Brother Arnold's lips. "Father Infirmarian, Father Infirmarian," cried Arnold in anguish and amazement, "who are all these people who have gathered about me? Ah, I see, here is my mother, she has come to bid me welcome to the greater reality, the greater life. My mother is here, my father is here, many friends of mine are here too." Very quickly Father Infirmarian rose to his feet, moved to the door and rapped suddenly and sharply on the door of the next cell. There was a startled exclamation from within and almost on the instant a shaven-headed monk appeared around the opening door. "Quick, quick," said Father Infirmarian, "call Father Rabbit. Brother Arnold is about to leave us." The monk stopped not to don a robe nor to put on his sandals. He sped down the corridor and leapt down the stairs. Soon he returned following Father Abbot, who had been waiting alone in his study. Brother Arnold looked about him wildly, and exclaimed in anguish, Why is it that we who preach religion are afraid to die? Why is it, Father Rabbit, why is it that we are so afraid to die? An answer appeared in Brother Arnold's brain. You will learn that, Arnold, when you come to us on the other side of life. You will be coming shortly. The Father Abbot knelt beside the bed holding the crucifix in his upraised hands. He prayed. He prayed for mercy upon the soul of Brother Arnold, who had so often departed from the prescribed script of religion. Beside the bed the guttering candle fled and went low, a vagrant breeze caught the flame and turned it into black carbon. It flared again, and in the light of that lone candle they saw Brother Arnold raise up crying, "Nunc Dimittis, Nunc Dimittis, Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace according to thy word." With that he groaned and fell back lifeless against the pillows. Father Infirmarian crossed himself and said a prayer for the passing of the dead. Then reaching over the head of the Father Abbot, who was still upon his knees, Father Infirmarian closed the eyes of Brother Arnold and put little pads upon them to keep them closed. He put a band beneath the lower jaw and held the gaping mouth shut. Then he tied the band on the top of Brother Arnold's tonsured head. Carefully he raised the dead monk's head and shoulders and removed the pillows. He took Brother Arnold's hands and crossed them upon his breast. Lower he attended to the necessary toilet, and then the sheet was pulled up over Brother Arnold's dead face. Slowly Father Abbot rose to his feet and went out of the lonely cell, went to his own office and instructed a monk. Minutes later there came the tolling of the bell to signal the passing from life to death. Silently the monks rose from their beds and donned their robes and filed down to the chapel to recite the service for the dead. Later, when the sun was rising above the horizon, there would be a mass which all would attend, and then the body of Brother Arnold, wrapped in his robe and with his cowl covering his face, with his hands about the crucifix on his chest, would be carried in solemn procession from the monastery down the garden path and into the little consecrated patch which held so many of the bodies of the monks from times long gone. Even now two monks were preparing to go out to the consecrated patch and dig the grave facing the sea, in which Brother Arnold's body would rest until its final dissolution. The two monks went out with spades upon their shoulders, silent, each thinking, wondering maybe what was beyond this life. Holy Writ taught us much, but could Holy Writ be depended upon exactly, precisely? Brother Arnold had always said to the anger of Father Rabbit that one could not take Holy Writ too seriously, but only as a pointer of the way, only as a guide, as a signpost. Brother Arnold had often said that the life hereafter was merely a continuation of the life on earth. Brother Arnold had been sitting silent and still some time ago in the refectory. Before him was an unopened bottle of aerated water. Suddenly he had risen to his feet, grasped the bottle in his hands and said, "Look, my brothers, this bottle resembles the human body, in it we have a soul. As I take off the cap of this bottle there is bubbling, there is turmoil in the water in the bottle, and the gases like unto the soul of a human burst forth." "That is how, my brothers," he had said, "we leave our bodies at the termination of this life. Our bodies are but clothing to the immortal soul. And when the clothing is old and tattered and no longer able to hold together, then the soul relinquishes the body and goes elsewhere, and for what happens elsewhere? Well, my brothers, each of us and every one of us will discover that in his turn." Brother Arnold had tipped the contents of the bottle into a glass and drank it swiftly, saying, "Now the body which was the water has disappeared, just as the body which is our body will eventually disappear into the earth and be resolved at last into its component parts." The two monks thought of that as they walked down the path and looked around for a suitable patch in which to dig the grave. 6 feet deep by 6 feet long by 3 feet wide. Without a word they set to work, carefully removing the turf and putting it aside so that later it might be used to cover a new grave. In the monastery the body of Brother Arnold was being moved before rigor mortis supervened, because that would have made bending the body around the curves of stairs difficult. Four monks had a canvas sheet with handles at each corner. Carefully they slid it under the body of Brother Arnold and positioned his body exactly in the middle of the canvas sheet. Carefully they drew the sides of the sheet up so that the handles at the top and the bottom could interlock, The head end interlocked together and the foot end interlocked together. Carefully the monks lifted the body off the bed, carefully they maneuvered it out through the doorway of the cell, and with a little struggle they managed to get it turned in the corridor. Moving slowly and reciting the set phrases of the ritual for the dead, they carried the body down the stairs and into the chapel annex.